An employee, if they don't have psychological ownership, they're not going to perform at a high level. And a lot of businesses, unfortunately, the owner is all about, well, what can I achieve for me? At the compromise of their employees. And so when an owner takes interest in their team, the entire company elevates, including the owner.
Hey, everybody. My name is Richard James, and I'm joined with my co-founder, MPS. MPS, how are you doing?
Hey, I'm great, but I'm even more excited because today we're joined by special guest Mike Michalowicz. So, Mike, welcome on.
Great to be here with you, gentlemen. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
So, Mike, if you watch your evolution as an author, as a business owner yourself, you can feel it in your books. I can see how you've evolved. As your business has evolved, you're like, okay, they really need help with this. Yeah. And so the first thing you helped them with in the very beginning was profit first.
Yeah.
We have to help them understand how to make money for them. But you made this point in your book and when you present that if we just make everything about revenue for the firm and profit for the owner, it doesn't feel like a win for everybody, does it?
That's right. There's really this kind of collective ownership that needs to come over a business. There was research done by a guy named John Pierce. This goes back to the 1980s, and they were studying what's called psychological ownership, which is different than legal ownership. And they said an employee, if they don't have psychological ownership, they're not going to perform at a high level. There's an indicator. If someone says, this is your company, they don't have psychological ownership. When they say, this is our company, they have psychological ownership.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting dichotomy because like MPS, you're a successful businessman in your own right, but here you are buying half the company and you're like, while yep. I care about my team, I've got this real live thing. I need to make sure the company's working for me as an owner to pay my mortgage payment. And then, oh, by the way, I'd like to get a return on my investment. So MPS, how do you feel about that when Mike says a lot of owners look for personal gain, but they don't look to build their teammates up financially? And I don't mean just by paying them more, but yeah. some of these other things we're going to talk about.
Yeah, there's always that little bit of terrifying feeling at the start when you first buy a business. The scarcity mindset and the protection mindset goes into play where I got to make sure I cover this, right? That's first and foremost. You also have to recognize that if you want to cover that mortgage payment, plus you want to grow that investment, it requires a team to do so. And so I still wanted to find a way to be able to contribute back to the team. And we do that in our own means. I recognize that as an important lever when trying to continue to grow the company. And it's a tough mindset to break. It's a very tough mindset to break.
Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, it just reminds me. Sometimes on stage, I'll ask people, would you rather make $100 an hour or $10 an hour? And, you know, some wise guy, of course, is like, $10 an hour. I'm like, okay. But the general rule is everyone would like to make more per hour. And then I ask them, who would like to make $100 an hour on their own sweat effort versus $10 an hour where it's automatically handed to you? And it starts waffling. $100 an hour is still more attractive, but it does require you. Then the final question is, what if that $10 an hour could be amplified to 20 or 30 or 100 or thousands? When does it become more attractive when it's on automatic? And there's a certain point. To MPS's point, it's very hard because of scarcity mindset saying, I'm giving up $100 an hour. So we try to cling on to it. We try to do everything. But when we start empowering our team, we also empower them to earn money for the business that ultimately, as a business founder, we took on extraordinary risk to start this company. We are providing jobs. We'll be rewarded, but we're rewarded initially in these smaller increments, but they can add up to more. If you're going to go into a team mindset in that when everyone's winning, I, the owner, am winning too, you do have to be in it for the long term. And you do have to kind of logically break through that scarcity mindset.
And so in many of your books, from Clockwork to Fix This Next to All In, you talk a lot about the team and how you have to build your team and manage your team and mentor your team and, you know, that whole process. And that's all true and important in the daily operations of the business. But I think we're talking about something bigger here, right? So there's two parts to it. First is MPS and I work really hard to figure out how we can share the wins with the team. So profit share with the team. So every quarter we sit down and we identify what was the profit for that previous quarter. And then we sit down as a leadership team and say, okay, what percentage are we going to share? Mm-hmm. And we put that percentage in a pie and we figure out how we're going to break it up amongst the team the best and most fair way we think we can. And so far, that seems to have worked. And so that's one side of the argument. I think you would speak to the fact, Mike, that's important. However, if you don't give them proper financial education, then giving them the money might not be doing them a service. It might do them a disservice because they don't know what to do with it. Is that fair?
Yeah. And it's actually the latter, the financial education and financial control that I think is superior. So we too do a profit share. We give 20% of equity distribution. So at the end of every quarter, we do a profit distribution to equity owners. We also do a flat split. So say we have 10 employees and say it's $10,000. Everyone, irrespective of how many hours you worked or some kind of other measurement, you get $1,000. What was interesting was the first few cycles of doing this. Now we've been doing it for over 10 years. The team come back, oh, this is amazing. Thank you. I never experienced it before. I think within like a year, it became expected. So the precedent was set. No one came and thanked me. And I remember one time I got not a single thank you. And I got all bitter. I'm like, why am I doing this? And then I realized, oh, I'm doing this for me. Yeah. I think that's something that owners don't look at is when we give to our colleagues, the emotion that we feel that we can support and give to them is actually the emotion that we should be valuing the most. Don't expect gratitude and thank you. Their work is the gratitude and thank you. When it came to financial education, I realized as my colleagues earned more here or even through other experiences they had in life, their earnings didn't seem to affect the quality of their lifestyle financially as much as the education. So before I even wrote this book, started bringing in a financial planner for everyone on the company's dime, just help people with finances. And it's funny, one of our colleagues here, they have a child going into college and she's like, we're prepared. We're prepared. And she starts tearing up and she's like, I'm prepared because of what I learned here. There's the true value. I will tell you this. I shared this on stage at the event too. When USA Today came out with an article, it really hit home with me. It said that worrying about money has become a part-time job. Hmm. And it was over 50% of the population worries about money for more than 4 hours collectively per day. Hmm. I think we have the opportunity through financial education to alleviate that worry. I'm not saying to give people more money because without education, you're not going to be able to control that money, but to give them the ability to control the money that they do have alleviates that worry. And when they are alleviated with worry, they can focus more on the work they're doing. And selfishly, that comes back to supporting the organization and our profitability, which then gets distributed to them again, too.
Hey, if you're a law firm owner and you'd like to learn a little bit more about growing your firm, you could head to thelawfirmsecret.com. We've got a bunch of free resources over there, and you'll find everything that you need to kickstart things.
So, MPS, I'm curious. I guess I have two curiosities. One, you're tight-fisted with your own personal cash. And there's some, if you open up your wallet, the moths fly out. You know what I mean?
I still got my communion money. Yeah.
I think you still have your communion money. Yes, exactly. So my question to you is, though, how do you feel about worrying about money? Do you feel like even though you do pretty well for yourself now, that you still have some money worries or concerns? And then secondarily, how important do you see it is to be able to remove some of that money worry from our team? Not because we just pay them more, but because they get educated. How important do you think that would be for our team?
Yeah, thankfully, we're in a good position financially, and there's really not a need to worry. There's still some of that scarcity mindset baked in. That's my own thing to work through. And then as far as being able to contribute to the team in a way where they get a financial education, I think it is important because, Mike, to your point, the average American, 50% of them, is spending 4 or more hours a day worrying about finances. Yeah. That's a big number. That's a really big number. And that's a lot of time in a day. So I think being able to relieve some of that pressure from our staff is wildly important, not only for them, but also to Mike's point, I think it does come back, right? Because now you've given them a path, you've given them an education from a financial perspective. It's a little bit of the law of reciprocity because now they want to figure out ways to help contribute back to the team, to the mission of the organization. I guess my question, Mike, would be for the law firm owner that's listening to this, what's a practical step they can take to actually implement something like this?
It's kind of weird. The bossy boss comes and says, hey, everyone, I should know how to be better with money. I think the first thing is to have an openness and humbleness as much as we're willing to around our own finances historically. I think what we can say is, listen, I've come from a position of struggling with finances. This is my story, and I have control over it now, not because I'm good with money. In fact, I consider myself the opposite. I'm not good with money, but I have great systems that are so good with money. And I would like to offer this same knowledge and learning to you. A business owner trying to teach their team about finances is also awkward because it is the most personal thing. It's up there with relationships and sex. Like there's certain private things. Money is probably the most up there. Bringing in a third party brings away that awkwardness. The third party could be a book or an education series or a video series. That's a third party. It could be an expert. But I think what the entrepreneur can do is say, listen, financial control has transformed my life and I want it for everyone here because I know the level of impact it can have. I'm going to facilitate getting some resources if you're interested. Mm-hmm. And then handing it off, I think, is the right approach.
So, yeah, I agree. Your book helps educate. Some experts can help educate. I've done that though. I've brought in the certified financial planner with the, because we offered a 401k and they came in educated.
Yeah, you're right. Right. Exactly. Yeah.
And it kind of, if I'm honest, it fell a little flat, right?
Yeah.
It was like, yeah, whatever. You know what I mean? There was no why behind it. It certainly felt like the financial planner had a bias to this whole thing. They were trying to get more.
Yeah. They're salespeople, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel good, despite the fact that the knowledge was important. Is it safe to say that it's really important for the business owner to do this themselves before they can go to their team and try to ask their team to do it? Because as you said, I know a lot of people who do well and their standard of living just keeps going.
You're amplifying, yeah.
Amplifying, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm guilty of that. You know, I can remember when Maria and I lived on $3,000 a month. I can remember like it was yesterday. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But point is that obviously today that burn rate is significantly different.
Sure.
But it feels like we've always kept it in line with as a percentage of our earnings.
And that's the key. That's the key. Financial independence is, by definition, living within your means or the means that you've identified. Mm-hmm. So people have different stages of life. Living with your means could actually mean spending down your money because of intentionality. Maybe mm-hmm. we're at end of life, or maybe we want to experience something of significance with our family at the moment. But it's also with intentionality. You may be more heavier towards saving and preparing for the future. I think showing your own experience is important. And it's because our clients of our organizations want this. I'll give a scenario. Imagine any organization, my company, coming to you and saying, hey, my employees are really struggling financially and barely getting by. I can't wait to work with you. I strongly sense you'd have a negative feeling toward me, even though the financial challenge they may face is their own responsibility. I may be paying them very well, but if they're not managing it, it actually reflects on my organization and people are hesitant to work with us. Our clients generally want holistically healthy organizations. So this isn't just about doing the right thing. It's not just about having your team pay attention to the business because they're not worried about money. It's also because your clients actually expect that from you. That's what a good company does. It cares for their team members beyond the pay. It's also the holistic component, which is management of the money too. It's just critically important and too often overlooked. Definitely not everyone wants it. Again, it's as intimate as going to the bathroom or having sex in the bathroom. Like, there you go. Like, it's intimate. So there's a boundary I have and it will never be discussed. There is cultural influence. I grew up in a family, we did not talk about money much at all, except for save, 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 save. And to some degree, there's a miserly syndrome that happened in our family. And that can be dangerous too, where people compromise their own welfare because it costs too much. Generally, when we deploy it in organizations, financial education, we try to find their early adopters. I shared at the event in Tempe that we worked with a company with 900 employees. Instead of starting with all 900 employees, we said, who are the people that really want this? We want to discuss their finances openly. And as awkward as it may be, who's comfortable with it? And about 30 people raised their hand instantly. And we had some really candid conversations. As we got to the next level of deploying it, some people wanted to learn the system, but they didn't want to talk about their finances. And other people said, not for me, not ready, or I'm good on my own. This is definitely something you don't want to force down someone's throat. Mm-hmm. Introduce it to the people who want it. And get some early advocates too, if you can.
Reminds me when I was a young business owner, I used to have book study Wednesdays and I would get everybody in the office and I'd line them all up on it. And I'd pull the book of the week off and I would like force them to go through the book, force them to read. I was getting nowhere, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
My best friend worked for me. He's like, dude, knock it off with the book studies, would you? And I'm like, why? He goes, I'm not going to read the book. He goes, I don't read. He goes, I'm in the warehouse. I have no interest in reading your book. I have zero interest in how to win friends and influence people. And I'm like, that's very interesting. I thought everybody wanted it. Why wouldn't everybody want this?
Right.
I don't understand. Why wouldn't you want this? And I slowly had to come to the conclusion that not everybody does.
That's right.
You could say, oh, I only want to hire people that do. Maybe Dave Ramsey's good at that because he teaches it. And so it's part of their culture. I bet there's people at Dave Ramsey's organization that aren't very financially secure because they don't really want to pay attention to it. They just want a good place to work. So I don't know, but I don't think that shouldn't ruin it for the ones that do.
Correct.
That was what my mentor taught me a long time ago. Don't let the bad ones ruin it for the good ones. Yeah. And I don't mean those who don't want it are bad, but in this particular instance, if somebody doesn't want this information, that doesn't mean that we shouldn't still do this. Because for those that do, as you said, you're going to get somebody who's going to come up to you at some point in the future and go, Mike, we're good when our kids go to college because of the knowledge I learned here.
Yeah, exactly. It was so amazing. And the sense, to MPS's point, of reciprocity, she came back and said, I just honor the company that did this. Then the funny thing is that the cost was nothing. It was just education. I mean, listen, there was some cost,
sure,
but it was the effort. And she recognizes that. Mm-hmm. And what I also think is it causes a cascade of, you wouldn't believe the company I work for, conversations that happen afterwards.
Listen, I know we're coming to the end. This is a quick conversation. Just to quickly outline, I mean, fundamentally, if they grab a copy of the book, you give them a step-by-step guide of how to do this personally and how to lay out a plan for their team if they wanted to try to tackle it in-house. And I think you had a place that you could send them if they wanted to get some professional help to execute this plan as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's correct. Most systems tell you you need to change yourself, and that's very difficult to do. It uses willpower and some stuff. This system is about channeling yourself. So if you're someone who logs into your bank account to see how you're doing on your numbers, that's perfect because this system works at that level. Go to my website, which is mikemotorbike.com. You'll see the book there and you can get some tools, resources, all for free. Don't even have to sign up, no downloads, no email sign up. Just get the materials and then you can go to your favorite bookstore online or off and get the book. It's called The Money Habit.
Yeah, The Money Habit is a super powerful tool. Here it is right here. Highly recommended. This is a signed copy for my driver.
Oh, right.
Porter right here.
There it is.
There it is.
Here's
there
to
it
your
is.
Wallet, it says.
Yeah. Hey, listen, everybody, we hope you appreciated this episode. Our goal for today really was to showcase our good friend, Mike Michalowicz. The book we're talking about right now is Money Habit and how to take what you're earning and manage it better and help your team manage theirs. But there's a lot of other books in his repertoire that will help you understand how to build a better business. We highly recommend him. Mike has been a guest in our world for almost a decade now. We appreciate him. Mike, thank you so much for coming and sharing.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Hey, if you're a law firm owner and you'd like to learn a little bit more about growing your firm, you could head to thelawfirmsecret.com. We've got a bunch of free resources over there, and you'll find everything that you need to kickstart things.